Tina Satchwell went missing from her home in March 2017. In the months that followed, there were appeals, media interviews and repeated searches of the house that she shared with her husband Richard in Youghal in Cork. He spoke publicly to journalists. He even invited them into the home. And for a long time, the case remained officially one of a missing person. But in 2023, that all changed. And a missing person was found dead in her own home. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. So we had this situation where this woman disappeared from her home in Youghal and her husband stays in the house and he gives interviews at length and he speaks to many, many journalists.
45-year-old Tina Satchwell disappeared from the couple's home in Youghal in County Cork on March 20th. Richard reported his wife missing 4 days later.
In every relationship, you know your partner. You know what you'd be talking about. And you know what you feel your partner would want you to do in circumstances. And that's all I did. I went by what I thought my wife would want me to do. Whether people agree with the way I did it, that's really up to them. They weren't living it, I was. I know my wife better than anybody. I probably know better than what I know myself. And I did what I genuinely felt was right.
And some of those conversations happen inside the same rooms where she once lived. Years later, after a full Garda search, her body is found under the stairs in that same house. Among the journalists invited in to speak with Richard Satchwell was Barry Cummins, who was then working for RTE. He interviewed him directly, spent hours with him, travelled around Youghal with him while reporting on the case. He's now written a book reflecting on that time and those interactions, Buried Secrets, The Murder of Tina Satchwell. So what does it feel like to be so close to the very man that would end up being found guilty for the murder of Tina in 2017? And was it obvious from the start that Richard Satchwell took her life? Well, Barry is with us here in the News Talk Daily studio. Barry, lovely to have you.
Good to be here, Ciara.
I suppose we should remind people of who Tina Satchwell was in all of this.
Tina came from a big family in Fermoy in County Cork, but she eventually found herself isolated by her husband, Richard, who she met when she was only 17. She met him in England and he was a good few years older. And by the time she was 20, on her 20th birthday, she married Richard. But Tina has many loved ones. She was one of a number of children in a family, and she has nieces and cousins and a big family. So she was a woman who loved fashion, and she was striking. She wasn't originally blonde, but she was blonde in her later years. But she originally had dark curly hair, but went blonde later on. And she was very much into animals, loved animals, dogs, parrots, any animal at all. One teacher remembered how she caught a butterfly once but didn't want to keep it. She wanted to set it free. And that kind of speaks to the type of woman she was. And was very chatty with people. She was always had a smile for people. But is that she was stifled. And Richard, her husband, always seemed to be there beside her, with her. She never seemed to have time for private conversations with people in her later years. He was an ever-present presence in her life. So many people would say they knew Tina, but they didn't really know what was going on.
And that's very much how he projected them at the time, this happy couple in love who lived in each other's pockets, who did everything together and did it willingly.
Yeah.
They lived in their own bubble.
Yeah.
And that had been her choice.
Yeah. And that they had the two dogs, Ruby and Heidi, and they had a parrot. They had one parrot, Pearl. It died and they got another parrot, Valentine. And it would seem that maybe the pets took the place of children. They didn't have children. Richard, when I met him, even one of the things he said to me, Ciara, at the start of how when he first saw Tina in Coalville in Leicestershire, where he was from and she had moved to, he said that from the moment he saw her, he said to his brother, "I'm going to marry her." And so he did. Now, the way he said it to me and to other journalists as well, it was kind of the as if it was something from a romance novel. Isn't that lovely to think of, that you see the person that you want to be with them, and from that moment, you know it's going to happen. But now looking back, he fixed his sights on Tina, fixated on her, it would seem, and won her over in that sense, in terms of they were married a few years later. But looking back now, it is chilling to think of how he described, before even speaking with her, he'd made up his mind, I'm going to marry her.
He was ultimately going to control her.
Yeah. I don't know, like, there certainly was control, and trying to figure when did it begin, I don't know. I don't know if it was there right from the start, or did it evolve? Did he even know himself at the start what he was doing? But Tina was learning to drive in England at one stage, but she never drove when she came back to Ireland. She later did a course in Cork in cookery, a cert course, around 2007, 2008, when she was married to Richard. So she did this course and she was a very good cook, a very good chef, very talented, but she never actually then worked at it. So she completed the course, she had the skills, but then didn't work. So Richard would then say to me, he said, sure, I drove her to wherever, I do all the driving, or that he would make the breakfast or whatever, that he took on a role of doing things, but he'd make sure you knew he was doing them. And he was always telling me what he had done for Tina. But it seems he may have been doing things so that he was taking control, and that little things like her not driving when she was well able to drive, but he was the one behind the wheel of the car. I do think about that now in terms of what was really going on there. And he was, he would drive her so she could go swimming. And the only place it would seem that she was free of Richard was when she was in the water, in the pool. And to think about that she had to put her head under the water and swim so that Richard wasn't right there with her all the time. That's quite striking.
Let's go back to your first encounter then with Richard Satchwell. It was obviously off the back of the Garda report that he had made that his wife had disappeared, which he made a couple of days after she actually disappeared. There was a period of time where he didn't bring it to their attention. What was your initial impression of him?
He was a friendly man who said very little, but he entertained talking with me. And I was, I'd spoken with him on the phone, first of all, to set up doing an interview. He knew I was going to ring him. And very quickly, I said I wanted to film in the house. And he said yes. And I went down and met him with a producer, Kevin, and camerawoman, Shirley. And we went in, the three of us, into the house. And he seemed slightly in awe of us being there or being in the house. He seemed to be slightly wide-eyed. Looking around as if he was a deer in headlights when the lights went on for the camera. But then he seemed also to be in control. He was telling us where to sit and that where we would do the interview in the front room of the house. He struck me as an odd character, but also I was conscious I was a guest in his house and he was making an appeal for his missing wife. And here's the thing that I think about now a lot. I went into the house because I knew Gardaí had searched it. So without thinking an awful lot, I said, well, I always thought it was very possible Richard had murdered his wife, that he might be the person responsible. But I never thought she was in the house. I thought, well, if he's responsible, he's a truck driver. He delivers tires around the country. Tina might be in Donegal or Wexford or Kerry, given his capacity to drive around the place. So I was, in my own mind, wrongly, of course, putting her out of the house. And he was quite comfortable to have us in the house as well. That we were in, he wasn't trying to get us out when we were finished the interview. He seemed to, he seemed to enjoy having us there. And only now do I see it, that we certainly wanted to film everything we could. And now I see although it was going to be part of his undoing years later when these interviews were later played to a jury, but he liked being in control and he liked the fact that we were there. Mm-hmm.
That was my impression of him too, that he actually enjoyed the attention.
Yeah.
Did you immediately suspect him?
Yes, but I would have these little battles in my mind that I was conscious that he looked suspicious. But I also, given other stories I would have researched down the years, was trying to keep my mind open. And that was difficult. But I was also thinking, what if a random attacker took Tina away? What if there's somebody else responsible and Richard just looks the part? And even the fact that he waited all those days before he reported her missing, what if that's just something silly and stupid that he did, but that it doesn't actually betray guilt of anything? So I was trying to almost explain things away to keep sitting with him. And I did meet him a number of times. But if I was 100% convinced he had done something, I wouldn't have been able to have him in my own car. I wouldn't have been able to go for walks with him. I wouldn't have been able to text him back and forth. We were never friends, but we were on first name terms. But yeah, I was very suspicious, but I also was, I kept a tiny percentage of my mind open as best I could, so that I could actually just do the job.
Do you think he was really going out of his way all of the time to work and build these relationships with the media and ultimately really manipulate them?
I think, yes, he was being selective about who he spoke with as well. He seemed to enjoy television and radio interviews, but he would also say that he liked being on radio live so that he could control what he would say himself. I think he did enjoy the television interviews, but he came to trust some of the reporters as well, the television reporters. And then he seemed to try to create this divide with a lot of people in the print media. He would refer to the print media as the press and try and get me to almost agree with him that, you know, that the press are out to get him and whatever. And I asked him to try and explain this, and he couldn't point to anything, but that he did say himself that some print journalists were manipulating what he was saying. I think they were simply reporting what he was saying, but, you know, with a very much a raised eyebrow about some of the things. But yes, I see he enjoyed the attention, and I wasn't simply entertaining that. Every time I met him, I learned something new, or he would give me something else to think about, either intentionally or unintentionally. So I kept in contact. We did 4 interviews in total, and each time I'd have something different coming away from it. And I would have kept meeting him and interviewing him as long as it took, but he
was constantly adjusting his story.
Yeah, and that was it. And I do believe he was more clever than a lot of people would think, but he was ultimately caught out by the lies, and he was telling different lies to different people. So he might tell me one thing and tell you something else, but eventually if you and I were to confer, we'd figure out, well, he's spinning a yarn to one of us, when in fact he was probably spinning a yarn to both of us. That's our different yarns. But he was telling people at the car boot sales that they attended that Tina had gone to England because she was sick. He was telling Gardaí privately in interviews at that time that Tina was beating him up and causing him physical harm. And there's no justification to that, and that wasn't borne out in any evidence, but that's what he was claiming. And then he would, you know, to someone like myself and yourself, when we met him, he would talk so lovingly about Tina, or that as if they did have a perfect relationship, or he was devoted to her. And a lot of it was about him and what he would do for Tina, or his devotion to a relationship, or the impact on him. He was putting himself in the centre of everything.
And I think you're right, actually, about that idea that he was more clever, more manipulative, more calculating than people perhaps gave him credit for. I remember when he came on Ireland AM to give an interview to myself and Mark Hagley at the time, and he brought the dog with him, and he brought the puppy with him, and the puppy had to come onto the sofa beside him. And of course, everybody was a tiny little cute black dog with a brown belly, really lovable little thing.
Yeah.
And that nearly distracted people.
Yeah.
So back on that day, back on the 20th, you realise she's missing from the house. Did you try and make contact with her? ring her best friend that she confided in?
Well, I don't have a number for a best friend. So, but as the week went on...
Tina has a mobile.
Yeah, but she left it to him because it's actually registered in my name. And I've actually... The guards have that now. And then I went
down...
Did
you go and visit her family or friends on the Monday, the Tuesday, the Wednesday, or the Thursday? Or was it just on the Friday?
Just on the Friday. I was 100% positive in my own head that she was after going to Fomoy.
Have you been taken in by the guards yourself, and have they asked you questions about your relationship and about the day that she went missing and about the fact...
I've not been taken in. I went in of my own...
Accord.
And I made a statement.
So, do you feel you're a suspect in her disappearance?
No.
I think... And that was one of the many distractions. The parrot, when I was in the house, and inevitably we turned to the corner where the parrot was. Now, the parrot would just make some noise and flap around. It never actually spoke or made any other sounds during that time. But if there's something else in the room, you will kind of, your eye will be drawn to it. So that was the parrot in the house. That was a distraction. The two dogs, Ruby and Heidi, we would film around Fermoy and in Yall as well. And Richard would be looking down at the dogs, or he'd be doing an interview with me, but then his gaze would go down to the dogs. And then if I just found, maybe this is psychology, if he looked down at the dogs, I looked down at the dogs. So then I'm kind of half distracted from the man in front of me because I'm looking at the animals. So it's like he's there in front of me, but he's able to divert attention every now and then. And even in the house when... I said to him, you know, where was Tina when you last had your conversation? And he would, he turned his head to the right towards the front window in the sitting room and said she was sitting over there where the parrot is now. We had a chair. So, and he turned his head. Now, we now know that that conversation never happened. But even his little tilt of the head to the right, looking at the window, it brings you your eye line to the window. So you're kind of imagining their conversation. And so you end up imagining something that never actually happened. But that kind of clever in painting pictures for people when the real truth, we don't know what went on in that house in the hours leading up to Tina being murdered. All we know from the jury verdict is Richard Satchwell murdered Tina. But actually how, when, where, we don't know.
Do you ever feel uncomfortable, Barry, as a reporter, that you spent so much time with him and that he did get all of this media attention and that you were in the home where ultimately she was lying dead, buried under the stairs?
Yes, I am uncomfortable about being in the house, but I would do it all again. And I think while, yes, Richard enjoyed all the attention, part of my reckoning with all this is that the evidence that was presented to the jury included all my interviews, not just me now, there were radio interviews, other television interviews as well. But the fact that I was in the house and we could show his demeanor in the house, and he's doing all of this, he's diverting attention and talking about the parrot and making up stories when all the while Tina lies dead, buried under the stairs about 6 feet away from us behind a door, out through a door. And so all of that was presented to a jury and they then found him guilty of murder. So there was a purpose to what I did and what all the other journalists did. Now, that wasn't our intention. We were simply trying to tell the story and get as much information. But the fact that...
He's tripping himself up,
yeah, so
eventually.
I do feel uncomfortable about some parts of it, but also I feel there was... something came of it and I would do it all again. I would go for the drive with him again. I would go into the house. I'd do it all again. But I am glad that it wasn't just to satisfy his need of publicity. It was actually to help fill in some of the blanks and to show him for what he was.
So she went missing in 2017. Her body wasn't discovered until 2023.
Yeah.
Do you get, and questions were asked about why a more thorough search wasn't carried out
on the home in the weeks and months after her disappearance, given the fact that there seemed to be no other lines of inquiry and no spotting sightings, no suggestion that anything else sort of had potentially brought an end to Tina's life. Did you get answers as to why the Gardaí made that decision?
I think Richard started the problems by the way he acted and the way he had isolated Tina. There's so many learnings for all of us now. And we as a society are learning more and more about coercive control and manipulation and isolation. But even in 2017, what happened was this man went into a Garda station to say, my wife's left the house. I don't want to report her missing. I just want you to know she's not where she'd normally be. Now, thankfully, the Garda, who we met, took a note of that and there was follow-up thereafter. But it was manipulation by Richard immediately that he wasn't even reporting or missing at the time, but trying to cover tracks. But that then led to eventually, it was the Gardaí who went back to him to say, we think you should report her missing so we can then properly find her because we don't know where she is. But it, over time, days became weeks, became months, and eventually Gardaí went into the house. They got a search warrant because they weren't satisfied with things at all, but they got a search warrant to go in. But that was to search for a missing person. There was no evidence of a crime at that stage. And the Gardaí will say to me that absolutely they have to work within the law. The search warrant is only for what you might call a visual search, a very good visual search, because they sprayed this luminol all around the house looking for traces of blood. So it wasn't that they just went in and looked around and headed out. They were 12 hours in the house. So it was a detailed search for the type of search it was. It obviously wasn't the right search for what had happened. And I think that Gardaí have learned an awful lot from this as well in terms of other types of searches in other homes as well. But that was a problem. And then it took an awful lot, because then Gardaí said, well, there's no evidence or there's no sign in the house. So
it took
everybody's attention
elsewhere.
Yeah, and eventually there was a big search in the forest in Castle Martyr. They searched the waters around Yall. Like, there was massive searching being done. It wasn't that nothing was happening. There was an awful lot. It was just in the wrong place. And maybe we're all learning something. There's no other case in Ireland of somebody who buried the body of their victim under the stairs that we know of. But now I'm starting to say, well, hang on. Are there other cases? I mean, how many other searches of houses have happened where Gardaí didn't excavate, where they did the same thing, walked around, had a good look, in fairness.
You say spent 12 hours.
Yeah, spent a long time, but actually it was the wrong type of search because somebody had actually done something so... I mean, it's so hurtful to the victim, it's so horrible, but to bury somebody face down like that under the stairs with cement then poured in on top of them and lino put on top of that... it's like I can't get my head around it. And I sat down with this man. So I sat knee to knee, like our knees were touching. We were so close on this settee, and looked into his eyes and the whole thing. And to think that he did this. So there's so many lessons for everybody in this, but he did do it. And now I'm asking myself how many other people maybe have done something similar, have hidden the body of their victim in the same way.
And it is, I suppose, worth pointing out that it was ultimately the work of the Gardaí that led to the discovery of her body. It was Superintendent Anne-Marie Toomey.
Yeah.
Who reviewed the material, fresh eyes on it, and said, you know what I see here suggests that there is enough to warrant that excavation. And that's how they found her.
It is. And herself and the rest of the Garda team who went back over everything. And some of the things we can thank in terms of this are... Richard's own phones betrayed him eventually, because he had at some stage, and I'm sure many of us have absentmindedly clicked different consents on Google or wherever else, he consented at some stage that Google could record where his phone was in real time at different stages. So Gardaí eventually got into the phone. They got Google to help with the information, which showed that Richard's phone back in March 2017 was not in the places he said he was at certain times. And the logic is he was with his phone. So wherever the phone was, he was. So This was in the cold case review that Gardaí started getting into the phone. But also, they came to a point where they said Richard Satchwell could be arrested on suspicion of the murder of his wife, but they didn't arrest him immediately. They waited over a year as they bottomed out so many other possibilities as well. Because one of the thoughts that investigators would have is that if somebody could be arrested on suspicion of murder, no evidence is found, they're then released, that the fear is if that person is guilty, they then are able to go and destroy evidence over the next couple of months or whatever. So Gardaí waited until they had expert advice to say to them, do you know what? You need to get back into that house, that there's so much wrong with this. And having studied Richard's interviews and his demeanor and the different ways he went on and the yarns he was spinning, you need to start back in there. And that's so it was 2023, 2 years into a cold case review, that they then went in. So they, and when they went in, they did it right. And within a day or two, Tina had been found.
You do say in the book that she was a woman whose voice was silenced and that systems failed to hear her. What do you mean by that?
Well, her voice was taken in a sense by the way Richard had isolated her over time and taken her to Yall. And her friends that I have spoken with told me that she didn't want to move from Fermoy. She was from there. She had family there, very close to certain people. Whereas Richard said he wanted to stay in Fermoy. And Richard had previous convictions for various fraud and different things like that. So there were different alarm bells going off there as well. But when she became a missing person, Gardaí did an awful lot to try and find her. But eventually, all those leads petered out and she became a cold case. And then COVID hit and Richard stopped doing interviews. And when Richard stopped being the public face of something, the story, as it was, went cold as well. And in one sense, had it not been for the right people in the right place to do a cold case review, Richard might have got away with it. Tina might still be where she was for 6.5 years. Or Richard could have done a runner at some stage. He could have fled that house. He could have disappeared himself so that he might have got away with it. Tina might have been found at some stage by people who might move into the house later on, but he might have got away. And when we all look back, and some of her friends or family would put pieces together where they'd say that they had uncomfortable conversations with Richard down the years. He would refer to Tina as his trophy wife and make jokes that maybe weren't too funny. But when people started adding in all their experiences of him,
there were red
flags. It fills in, yeah. But it's only in hindsight. Dan, it's too late for Tina, obviously. But maybe other people in other cases, when they hear about some of the commentary, that people might say, well, I'm unsettled about a particular person and I have to find a way to talk about that with somebody because, yeah, there are other Richard Satchwells.
Barry Cummins, thank you so much for being here today and joining us on News Talk Daily. And Barry's new book, Buried Secrets, The Murder of Tina Satchwell, is out now and available online or in store. Drop me an email with any of your thoughts on the podcast today. We really would love to hear from you. News Talk Daily at newstalk.com, or I'm on Instagram at official Ciara D, and I'd love to hear from you there. Until tomorrow morning, goodbye.